Welcome back to the Daily Thunder Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Woods, and I'm here, as always, with my guy, Brandon Rabar, Daily Thunder beat writer. Brandon, we haven't talked since before Thanksgiving, so happy belated Thanksgiving, which is so late, and a happy early Christmas. What's going on?
Yeah, not much, man. Yeah, we haven't, you know, it's funny. We have like a modern day friendship where we only talk through like text. Like the only time we talk like quote unquote over the phone or with our voices is when we do this podcast.
That's right.
It really is. But we're pretty much talking every day, like, literally, you know, about whatever games are going on and the Thunder and things like that. So we're constantly talking to each other, but we never talk to each other. So it's a it's a perfect Gen Z 2022 friendship.
It really is. It's what I think Steve Jobs somewhere would be proud. You know, yeah. I think this is what he wanted all along. All right. So last night, we're recording this on Tuesday night. By the way, shout out to my mom. Her birthday's today. So last night, the Thunder lost help me out, Brandon. My brain is scrambled. They lost to the Mavericks. They lost to Luka. And SGA ties the career high, 42 points. Why has it become such a difficult number for him to get to?
It's so crazy. I was like, come on, just let him get one more back. Because this is the third time
yeah.
he scored 42 points. It's yeah. career high. It's like, you know, they say that like the record for the mile, like it could be broken, but people can't get past like the mental aspect of whatever the mark is.
Right.
But once they get past it, they could break it by a couple of seconds or whatever it is. It's like once SGA gets to 43 in a game, he's going to bust out to 50. He's just got to get past that elusive 42 first.
I like it. Yeah. Once we see 43 and 50 are basically the same thing at that point.
Right. Yeah.
We saw a bunch of free throws last night. The game actually took Shea to second in scoring per game behind only Luka. And I believe it's like a point difference, which at this point, with this many games played, that's a lot. But I wanted to ask you a little on the spot trivia, and we've got more questions coming up later, but there are only three players who have scored more total points than Shea this season.
Okay.
Do you want to take a stab at the other three? One is obviously a giveaway. Like one of the three is a giveaway.
Right. Yeah. So Luka is obviously one of them. I know it's not Joel Embiid because he hasn't played enough games, because technically he's number one, but he hasn't played enough games to cross the threshold. So obviously he wouldn't lead in total points. I would guess KD and Curry are the other two. No, Giannis. Hold on. I got to pick two out of three between Giannis, KD, and Curry. Who's missed more games? I'm going to say it's KD and Curry.
So Kevin Durant is first in total points okay. this year.
Yeah.
But you have not named the other player. Luka is number two. Number three, you haven't named yet. Curry is number five.
Okay. Oh, shit.
Behind Shea.
Okay. Who am I missing? Oh, Jason Tatum.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
I don't know. I blanked. I don't know. I did.
So okay. Durant's played in 28 games. Luka and Shea both 25, and Tatum 27.
Okay. Well.
And Shea,
and that's why we use per game. Because, like,
exactly.
I mean, some people like the whole total points thing. I'm like, okay. I mean, yeah, but you know, to me, it's more impressive to average 32 than it is to average 28, but to play five more games.
For yeah. sure. The another wild tidbit about that top five: the plus minus for each of those players. Durant is first. I'll just read them in order: plus 61 for the season. Luka is plus 97. Tatum is a plus 214. Steph at fifth is plus 171. Shea for the season, minus five.
I mean, that just goes back to the teammates and the surrounding cast is all that goes down to.
He is doing so much for a team that is still struggling. A couple weeks ago, we were, I would say three episodes ago now, we were talking play in, we were talking some different things, and we were at a very different stage. It feels like they're settling back into some bad habits and just not defending specifically the three line like they probably could and should.
Yeah, you know, this goes back to a few things. I think it goes back to the youth of the roster, you know, defense and discipline and things like that. I think more so than that, though, because this team has proven to be a high effort, high IQ team. It's just the way that, and they buy in. So I don't think it's that. I think some of it's, you know, just the youth. I do think a lot of it, it's funny because we talk about perimeter defense. I think a lot of it is not having a true center right now. I think that they're so outsized down low. You know, they're missing a 7'1" Chet Holmgren, you know, size hole there in the paint. And so you have to help. I mean, Jeremiah Robinson, Earl Poku, these guys are, you know, playing at center a lot and they're doing the best they can, but they're really power forwards. And they're just undersized, especially, you know, these last few games. You're going up against Steven Adams and Jaren Jackson Jr. You're going up against Evan Mobley and Robin Lopez and Jarrett Allen. You know, just a lot of size down low. So you have to help out some. And then, you know, teams can just score in the paint easier as well. Some of it, I think, is rotations and things like that. Some of the Thunder players, obviously better defenders than others, but then also you're missing guys like Kenrich Williams has been missing some games. Lou missed some games. Baisley has been playing some games. So, you know, those three are probably the best overall defenders. And then they just don't have the size down low. And I think there's just kind of a ripple effect, and it's just kind of a culmination of all those things. I think
you saw the rebounding take effect last night. Just, the Mavericks took and made a lot of threes, but there were quite a few off of second chances and even third chances, where those threes obviously produce long rebounds and they did not bounce the Thunder's way. And you definitely saw the lack of size hurt them. Do you think that's like a day one fix with Chet, or is he still going to be challenged by the same size that you're talking about?
I think Chet fixes a lot of the Thunder's problems. I'm not saying that he's going to come in and, you know, the team is completely turned around, but, you know, on defense, rebounding translates, first of all. Like, that's one of the skills from college that translates. I mean, when you're 7'1", you have a 7'6" wingspan and you play with high effort, you're going to get rebounds. I mean, you just are. I mean, look at Josh Giddey. Josh is killing it on the boards.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's technically a guard. Yeah, he's 6'8", but he's averaging like 7.8 rebounds. You're telling me Chet can't get double figures in rebounds right off the bat? I just think that he can. I think he can do that. So I think he helps with the rebounding. I think he helps with the paint defense. I think he helps with the rim protection day one. And then on the opposite side, I think he helps with spacing. I think he helps with shooting. He's such a large part of this team's future that it's hard to make long-term projections of what this team is supposed to look like based on this season, when Chet Holmgren arguably is the second biggest piece of the puzzle and it's missing.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even say arguably. I would just say
I agree.
I agree.
He is like we've talked about, probably the, like, if we're talking about like prospects, you know, he's the five star of this team. Like, he's the guy that you lose all those games for. And yeah, it's going to be it's going to be incredible. I was just a couple days ago, went back and watched all of his summer league stuff. And it made me think about how excited we were that like he was going to play within a matter of a couple weeks. And then obviously just how much of a bummer it is that we aren't getting to see him this year, but it is interesting seeing some more clips out of him out of practice. And post practice,
he doesn't have the boot on anymore. You know, it's been kind of a progression. He went from shooting from the scooter to shooting in the boot. And now we're getting to see him just like in, you know, regular basketball shoes. I think we're in Nikes. I'm not like a sneakerhead, so I couldn't tell you what kind, like the Air 12s or whatever.
Forgive him, listeners. Forgive him.
I know it's like people like yelling. I know. I have some friends that'd be really ashamed of me for not knowing. But it's fun to see him actually, you know, in basketball shoes, and like he's got like a little pep in his step. Like he's not going to play this season. So first of all, just that is not going to happen. I don't care like if he's 100% healed by like, let's say March, they're not going to throw him into the fire, no matter what the Thunder's record is or anything. It's just not going to happen. They're going to make sure he's 110% and that he's fully healed, and they're not going to rush it or risk it or anything like that. So that said, he looks pretty spry in the clips that we've seen. And when I've been at practice and things like that, he looks pretty good. Not to be like overselling or anything like that, but given the injury and things like that, I didn't expect him to go like, it looks like he's going like at 75%, or I'll just throw a number out there. And to me, that's pretty encouraging at this stage.
No question.
75% and just, you know, jump shots, shooting and things like, he's not like playing 5-on-5 or anything right. like that.
And the team has stated a couple times now, like he's on schedule. Like he's where they expected him to be. None of this is a surprise, but he's on track. He's doing well. And he just, a month ago, maybe a little less than a month ago, he had the surgery to remove the hardware from the initial surgery. So that's another step in the process. And, but yeah, it's encouraging that they're, you know, the Thunder fans, I feel like, have always braced themselves for setbacks or a loose stitch, or we've got to go get a screw that's not cooperating. So it's good to have crossed that hurdle now, and he's now on his way to that full recovery, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, it really is. It's, you know, this season, coming into the season before he got hurt, I'd say that, you know, hoping that Shea takes a leap, and he has, and then, you know, hoping to see some stuff from Jalen Williams and Usman Jang, and I'm sure we'll get to that, but we have, hoping that Josh Giddey improves. I think he has, regardless of what some people think. And then obviously the biggest thing might have been, you know, Chet Holmgren. So, you know, you kind of pivot. Once he got hurt and was going to miss the season, it's like, okay, well, I just hope to see some progress from him. I hope to see something that is encouraging as far as, you know, full health for next season goes. And I think, you know, it's very, very early in the recovery process, but it looks very encouraging so far.
All right, we're going to do something a little unique that will probably be something we do a lot more going forward. And that is three questions from each of us. We have not seen each other's questions yet. I will pitch the first question to you, Brandon. Oklahoma City is on pace for 32.8 wins. They are winning just over 40%. That's their win percentage so far. So that projects out to 32.8 wins if this continues. So okay. The first question is over under 32.5 wins for this team.
I mean, that feels right about right. I'm going to go under. I'm going to go just a little bit under. Mm-hmm. I'm going to expect them to end up with it right about 30. they're definitely better than they were last year. I mean, if you look at point differential, margin of victory, whatever you want to call it, they're at negative 1.9 right now, but that's actually a pretty competitive team. And, you know, it's played out that way. They've been in most games. There's only been a handful of games they've really been blown out. They've lost some really close games. They've won a few close games. But, and then I know their strength of schedule, like for the remaining of the season, is about middle of the pack. I do still think that there is a Victor Wembanyama-sized carrot that's gonna spring up towards the end of the season. Sam Presti said at his exit interview last year and at his preseason press conference this year that as long as the Thunder basically are in it, playing meaningful games, they will play meaningful games. And I believe that. But once they aren't, then they will pivot to development, basically. And I think that's what we'll see happen. I think towards the end of the season, Wembanyama and Scoot Henderson and Cam Whitmore and the Thompson twins, depending on what you think of them, are pretty good motivators to, you know, maybe arrest some guys on back-to-backs or, you know. Now the big question here is SGA, and if he's going towards like an all NBA type season, you know, you want to let him continue that, but you know, just Dort, Giddy, you know, those kind of guys get some rest here and there. I would think so. I would think that in this rebuild, that would be probably a smart move. So I will say just under 32 games.
I'm going to go under as well. For all the reasons you mentioned. And right now, as it stands, Oklahoma City sits at 11 wins. There are three other teams, Bulls, Wizards, Lakers. You would all expect them to they're in much different places than Oklahoma City as franchises. But there are only five teams with less wins. That would be the Magic. Or let's go in order. The Spurs and Rockets, both at 9. The Rockets beat the Suns tonight. Spurs and Rockets at 9, Magic at 8, and the Hornets and Pistons both at 7. And then the next group is right there at 11 wins. So what felt like a huge cushion between the Rockets and the Pistons early in the season and the Spurs is not that anymore. So there's so much season left. So this is going to obviously there's a lot of time for it to change, but 3 weeks ago, I thought the bottom was unattainable and now I don't feel as strongly. But yeah, I'll go under as well. I would say like 28, 29, 30, something in there. I would be surprised if they won more than 30 at this point.
Yeah, I think that this is a win-win season for Thunder fans, quite honestly, and for the Thunder organization. The team is showing a lot of encouraging stuff for the future as far as like the young core, Jalen Williams, you know, Poku and his improvement. Absolutely. Josh Giddey has really been picking it up the last couple of weeks. His shooting percentages are getting better and better. And then of course, Shea has just been, you know, on another level. He's an all-star. I mean, there's no doubt he's becoming a superstar. And so this season has been fun from that aspect. And they're still giving you good competitive games. If you look at those other bottom teams that you talked about, all those teams, their net rating is between negative 5 and negative 10 per game. The Thunder at negative 1.9. So it plays out how the eye test, you know, looks as well. The Thunder are more competitive than those teams. So you're getting more exciting, entertaining games on a night-to-night basis. But you're still right there in range of getting Wembanyama or Scoot Henderson as far as having, you know, some of the best lottery odds. So to me, that's a win-win. It's kind of the perfect scenario. I mean, besides Chet being hurt, that would be the only bummer I'd say.
All right, what's your first question?
My first question, and this may feel like recency bias, but I don't think it is. I'm going to go ahead and ask it. Is Isaiah Joe a member of the Thunder Young Core going forward? I think that when he was signed, everybody just assumed it was just kind of like, you know, just a guy, you know, just kicking the tires, just kind of seeing. But should he be considered a part of the core moving forward?
I'm staring at his contract information right now because my second question was, has Isaiah Joe earned himself another year? So same page there. His second, like, so this is the last year. This is the only year of guaranteed money. He's making 1.8 this year. Next year is non-guaranteed 1.9 million. And then he has a team option for 2.1 in 2024-25. That would be his age 25 season. So I guess we can both answer this. Obviously, we're going to answer our own questions either way. But pretty funny that
pretty much the same question working differently.
Yeah, I think he has to be considered on par with someone like Aaron Wiggins. And that may not be a clear answer to the question, but I think he has to be considered for how effective of a shooter he is. Thunder teams in the past with players like this, I'm thinking of Anthony Morrow, and Joe and Morrow are different in certain ways, but the Thunder could never get Morrow or Brenas, in my opinion, enough shots while they were on the floor to maximize their value. And it made it easier. It made it tougher on them to obviously maximize them, but also it made them more expendable and interchangeable. And I think that they're easily finding Isaiah Joe shot attempts. And I think that's a credit to Isaiah Joe. Number one, he's just more of an athlete than Anthony Morrow. He's not eye-poppingly athletic, but he is more athletic than those guys. He moves really well, even with the ball. He doesn't like stick to the floor as soon as he catches it. He's still got a lot of, he's still got a lot more to his game than just like, once I get it, it has to go up or I have to move it along. And I think Shea draws so much attention right now. And I don't think teams have, I don't even think teams know who Isaiah Joe is. And I think that also works to his benefit. But yes, I think there is enough there. He is clearly a sniper. Like, he's really, really good. We've heard of, I'll say Abdul Nader, to bring up an old friend. Like, we always heard he hits everything in practice. He's probably the best shooter on the team, but like, that didn't always bear itself out in games. Isaiah Joe is an in-game sniper. And I cannot imagine what the like 2014 through 2016 teams could have done with this guy in those lineups. But yes, I'm very pro Isaiah Joe getting a look beyond this year. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And it may seem like, oh, too small sample size, recency bias, things like that. He has to play enough. He has to put up enough shot attempts. But I'm with you. It's not only that he's a sniper. It's like when he does it, he's come in.
Oh, yeah.
In like clutch time minutes. He set like for 46 minutes. Then he comes in, the game's on the line, and he'll just hit three back-to-back three. Like, he's doing it in clutch time. He's doing it in overtime. He's doing it with no warm-up at all. He's doing it, you know, random minutes. It just feels like Shea really likes playing with him, which makes sense. He's an outlet. He's somebody to give him some space. He's somebody that hits shots when he passes to him.
And they're playing them a ton together.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. It seems very purposeful that almost all Joe's minutes seem to be with Shea.
Yes.
And Shea automatically looks for him. Like, he is looking for him every time he's out there. And that's why he's getting so many shot attempts, and he's making them. I mean, he's number one in the league in 3-pointers made per 36 minutes. Like, he's averaging 5.7 makes per 36. Steph Curry's career high is 5.6. Now, obviously, different situations, limited minutes, small sample size, all those things. I get it. But he just looks the part, doesn't he? And he's only 23 years old. Mm-hmm. And that contract is such a bargain price. And look, 23 is so young. That's a year younger than Shea. It's what, a year older than Aaron Wiggins, and he still feels like a rookie in some ways. So the guy is still young. He's on the timeline. He didn't get a lot of minutes in Philly. Philly fans are very upset, and Philly, like, analysts and blog guys are really upset that Philly let him go. They were already upset they let him go, and now that they see what he's doing with OKC, they're really, really upset. I know, because I see it on social media. So, if you take away draft capital, if you take away, like, you know, playing only, you know, 20 games with the Thunder this season, as opposed to like a year or two, like some of these other guys, if you were to compare Isaiah Joe to, like, I'm not saying he's better or anything like that, but Aaron Wiggins, Trey Mann, Jeremiah Robinson, like, where would you value him and his contract? I think that you would feel like, hey, this 23-year-old dude who can shoot like crazy, plays well with Shea, and has a really good contract, and is a high character locker room guy, and he can move a little, he can create his own shot a little bit, I think that you would value him as a core young member going forward.
I agree. I'm so glad you mentioned, like, him just coming in and, like, hitting shots immediately off the bench. I think it's so overlooked just how difficult that is, to come out for pregame warmups. Let's say the game's at 8 o'clock. It tips at 8:10. You're done with warmups by 7:55, and he might not shoot again until, like, sometimes like close to 9 o'clock. And he's just always in rhythm. And it's kind of scary. Like, those are the, when you see that happen consistently, he is shooting 47% from three this year. And he's taking them. Like, when this is not like going 1 for 2. He's hit 7 threes in a game this year. He's gone 7 for 10. He's gone 3 for 4, 3 for 5, 3 for 6, 4 for 7. These are just in the last 10. He's playing more and more minutes. It's really, really impressive. Not even just for him, but like, that guys do this regularly. It's insane. It is insane to go sit on the bench for the majority of a half and then be asked and expected to go in and hit threes. It's just, it shouldn't be realistic. And it is for so many players, including Isaiah Joe. It is really amazing. All right. That was my second question. So you go ahead with your second question.
All right. So my second question is, do you believe in Josh Giddey's 3-point improvement? Like, do you think it's happening? Like, do you think that there is an improvement? You know, he's improved his 3-point shot. I'll let you answer. I'll just ask the question and let you go from there, because it seems like a hotly debated topic.
Yeah. I'll say, at times, like, make or miss, there are times that when he lets it go, I'm like, yep, that's what they're going for. That fluid and efficient of a motion, feet are in a good place. He's landing in a good place. The elbow is where they want it. His left thumb is out of the release. I'm like, yep. And a lot of times it goes in when that happens. Sometimes it doesn't. That's how it works. But there are, I would say, once or twice every couple games, maybe probably nets out once a game, I'm like, yep, that's what they're working on right there. and you can see it. Lot less dip, lot less shoulder, like lean. It's hard to, I'm like moving my body, and you can't even see it, but it's like, it looks very secure and it looks very efficient. And so, yes, I see what I can definitely see what they're working on. I can see where they're trying to get him, and kudos to him for year on year improvement as far as mechanics go. It's not all the way ironed out. Like, there are still times where I'll say, I think his release is still too predicated on like the circumstances, like who's around him, what was the pass like, where did he catch it? That kind of stuff. I've seen a lot of improvement when he's stationary, catching the pass, and he's able to just put it up. That's where he looks the best. That's where the stuff looks like he has a split second to think about like what they've drilled. That stuff makes me very encouraged. The other stuff, where he might have someone near him and he feels rushed, or the stuff off the dribble, he might be coming around a screen and just stepping into something. And this is not just the three-pointer, but even inside the three-point line, I think still is a work in progress. So I would say I'm moderately optimistic. Certainly not sold yet.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it's, again, we're working with small sample sizes, but last year was a small sample size. You know, he only played, what, like 50 games last year. So, I mean, they're both small sample sizes, but if you know, everybody was down on his 3-point shooting last year for good reason. He was not a good 3-point shooter. But if we're going to be down on him on a small sample size last year, I mean, I think we should be encouraged by the small sample size this year. He's improved it by about 6% so far this year. That's really good. Like, you know, I hope nobody was expecting him to go from like a 26-27% 3-point shooter to like a 38% 3-point shooter. I mean, like that just doesn't happen overnight. So to be this early on, and at this point he's at 32, you know, it's funny with this small sample size, like every make or miss, you know, affects the percentage, not by decimals, but maybe like half a decimal, you know, half a point or something like that. Right now, he's 24-75 on the season. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I almost had a Charles Barkley moment there. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I've only said his name 700,000 times over the past 3 years. He is also at 24-75 on the season. And I think we all think that Shai is a good shooter. And most people have not thought of Josh Giddey, again, for good reason, as a good shooter. But they've hit the exact same number of threes on the exact same number of attempts this season. Now, Shai's is more difficult for the most part. He's creating his own for the most part. He's, you know, facing tougher defenses for the most part and things like that. But I think it's very encouraging, is what I'm saying, for him to already improve this much. And I'm with you, the eye test, there seems to be some improvements. And as far as my own personal confidence when he's shooting, I feel about 6% more confident this season when he's shooting, it feels like, than I did last year. So that passes the eye test as well. The heart gut test, I guess. I think that he's improving. And I think this early on, that's a great place to be.
You may know this, you may have looked at it, but what would you, if you had to guess his 3-point percentage over the last 10 games, what would you say?
Yeah, I don't know what it is the last 10 games, but I know at one point I look at all the trends and things like that. I can't remember exactly what it is, but I know over the past, like certain, like, is it 5 games? It might be 10 games. He's at like 50%. He's been on a tear lately.
In his last 10, it's 39.3.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Which is, yeah, absolutely. It's really, really strong. I always think about like Jason Kidd, like dominant ball handler and really improved, not drastically, but he improved to the point that by the end of his career, it was much improved and very effective. And I think it could look something like that, where I don't think the offense is hunting threes for him, and I don't think it really ever will. But for him to be able to, in rotation, be able to catch and shoot from any part of the three-point line, I think will be very, very important for the team. All right, I'm going to go with my third question. And I saved what I felt like was my best question for last, so I'm very excited to hear your answer to this. Who projects higher over the next 3 years? Jalen Williams or Josh Giddey? And I'll ask it to you like this. In 3 years, who could fetch more in a trade?
Man, you're really putting me on spot on this one. I like that. First of all, that is a great question. And let me preface this with a couple of things before I answer. let me go ahead and straddle this fence real quick.
and we're talking, just so we're clear, we're talking Jalen Williams from Arkansas, just so you
right,
know.
Right, right. No, from Santa Clara. I know you were kidding, but there's going to be, I've seen too many like people who did this for a living get confused. So wow. I just want to, you know, be clear to everyone.
We've had a couple road broadcasts really butcher it over the last week.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We have. So I'll preface this, you know, this, Ryan, I was really, really big on Josh Giddey pre-draft. Like when we were doing all the pre-draft, I was on him early, for months and months before I ever knew that he was going to be a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder. At one point, I remember I said that he was my favorite prospect outside of like the top five consensus guys. Mm-hmm. I tweeted that out. So I'm big on Josh Giddey. I think he had a great rookie year. I think he actually had an underrated rookie year when all was said and done. And I'm very high on him. I really am. That said, Jalen Williams, just overall game, the shooting, the playmaking, the athleticism, the cutting, the attack in the rim, the defense, the 7'2 wingspan with a 6'6 frame. I feel like the Thunder got such a huge steal at the number 12 spot. I really feel like it's pretty equal. I'm going to give you an answer. I am going to give you an answer. I'm not going to straddle the fence. I'm saying all that to say, I think it's pretty even, and I don't think you can go wrong with this. And that's why it's such a good question. And I think that's great for the Thunder that you can make this argument either way. When one guy was picked number 12 overall and one was picked at number 6, and some considered that everybody considered that a great pick at number 6. So it proves the value that Jalen Williams is showing at the number 12 pick. At the end of the day, next to Shea, the scoring efficiency that Jalen Williams potentially provides, because right now he's scoring so efficiently and he's not even shooting the ball well from three. And I know he's capable of it because he shot 40% from three in college and he's a good free throw shooter. So I do believe in the 3-point shot to be at the very least NBA league average, if not better. And right now it's well below that because he's a rookie and that's usually what happens.
End of 3 years, after 3 years.
Okay.
Is the timeline.
All right. Edit this out so I'm not stammering and sound so much like an idiot trying to come up with a good answer. No, I'm just kidding. You can leave it all in. I will buy a hair, by one strand of Josh Giddey's, you know, beautiful head of hair, go with J-Dub.
Interesting. Interesting.
I don't know, man. Ask me tomorrow. I might have a different answer.
I'm glad it took you as long as it did. I think it's an interesting thought exercise. My answer is J-Dub pretty easily. I think it's I think the, for the reasons you mentioned, the offensive efficiency, if it didn't look so much like Harden, I wouldn't mention it, but I have to mention it because it does. He plays diagonal like Ginobili. Like he doesn't just play in a straight line, and he does a lot of the playmaking, like he gets into the lane, but it's just to explore sometimes. Like he's not always there to shoot. Like he's got his head up looking for cutters, and like it's that stuff is already happening as if it's been happening for years. And the offense is so far ahead of what I would think a 12th pick in the draft would be. It's amazing. So I would, like, he's starting to show flashes of like what a lead scorer on a good team looks like, in my opinion. Like the three ball isn't there yet, but everything else reminds me of like the trajectory of a player that becomes a number one option for a team. And so with that said, I think it's J-Dub pretty comfortably if we're talking 3 years down the road.
Yeah, that's fair. But the interesting side of this, 3 years down the road, Josh Giddey is actually younger, even though Jalen Williams is the rookie. So there is argument to be had even though Josh Giddey is quote unquote the vet here, he's younger and actually could conceivably improve even more, and at a higher trajectory. I'm not saying it will or won't happen, but there is the flip side of that, I think.
That's a great
because
point.
It's weird. Yeah, since J-Dub's a rookie, we might be a little skewed there. But yeah, J-Dub has just been so impressive. In a lot of the ways, the same way as Josh Giddey, the IQ, the overall game, and things like that. But it's that scoring efficiency. Mm. And Josh Giddey is a special passer. And for his position, he looks like a special rebounder, and I think he's got J-Dub on both of those. But J-Dub is also a very good and underrated passer. Not on the level of Giddey, but man, he is a really, really good passer. I mean,
really good.
You've got a few on this team between Giddey, SGA, and now J-Dub. But you just have to keep going back to the scoring efficiency and just the overall game. And I think he has a leg up, I believe, on Giddey as far as defense potential goes as well.
We mentioned last year, and it's fair this year as well, like Giddey's like potential assists, like the passes that were just phenomenal that didn't lead to buckets because the shots were missed. You could make a pretty incredible reel for J-Dub as well this year. Of really awesome shot opportunities, high quality that he created for others that didn't result in points. I've been very impressed. That's a very interesting question. I think that's a question we might have to double back to like later on in the season, because this is stuff that as J-Dub progresses could answer that question one way or the other a lot easier. So those are my three questions. You've still got one left.
My final question is the Thunder starting power forward of the future on the roster currently?
Golly, that I had typed out a very, very similar question.
Did you really?
And deleted it. So this is great. That last question, had it not just popped in my head, that's the direction I was going.
You know what's funny? I had a very similar question to your J-Dub versus Giddey, but mine was J-Dub versus Jang. But I didn't want to have to pick or want to have to make you pick. So I got rid of it. So I had to go through it anyways, though.
you brought it on you. I brought it on you.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a couple candidates, in my opinion.
We do.
I think J-Dub is a decent opinion or a decent candidate. I think you could see him if Dort is long term, if Giddy's long term, which I think we both expect. And obviously Giddey and J-Dub could be interchangeable. Don't know if they view J-Dub as like this sixth man that closes a lot of games, or if they view him as a starter. But I think this is a Poku question, right? Like, this is a question about,
right,
has Poku's improvement and his development, has it earned him and solidified him a starting spot? So I think we both view Chet as a center.
Yes.
I think you could make an argument. And I think the other person that we talk to a lot throughout the day in Spencer Davis would argue that Poku is also a center. But I think we've also seen some limitations and some how that could make things tough, especially in the rebounding department. So I'm going to say yes for two reasons. I think Poku has done enough to specifically on the defensive end. He's shooting well, but the defensive end has been, in my opinion, a revelation. I will say Poku has earned the four through his play this year, and because I see a lot of 2-3 like shooting guard small forward types, like wing scoring in this draft coming up, that I think would be the pick. And I don't think they're going to be desperate for Poku's replacement based on how well he's played. So I'm going to say yes with Poku in mind. I think Baisley is out. I guess Jang should be mentioned. We're both like dangerously excited about him.
Yeah.
We're over the moon about him.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear your case for him as the starting four, but I'll say whether it be Poku, Jang, or otherwise, I think, or if they view, or if they want to play Chet there, I do think the starting four is currently on the roster.
Nice. That's a tough one. I mean, obviously, if Chet is the five, SGA is the one, you know, those are starters. Josh Giddey, whether you want to call him a 1, 2, or 3, you could make the case that on defense he's best suited to guard a four in the future as he bulks up. But let's say he's still a guard, or at least a three. J-Dub, let's say that he's a 1, 2, or 3, even though he can and has played the four. Jeremiah Robinson Earl, like him a lot, but I think ultimately he's a bench guy. I think this question, as far as the current roster goes, comes down to Poku or Usman Jang. The other thing is, I do think Thunder are going to get a nice pick this year. Is that going to be a guy who ends up being a power forward? The thing is, whoever that is needs to be a guy who can, you know, take on the best assignment as far as the other team's best offensive three or four. Like, he's got to be a good defender, I think.
Would you put defense as a higher priority for that spot over shooting?
No, I would still say shooting. Like, ideally, you want a guy that's going to do both. I mean, I think ultimately that's what you're looking for. I'm going to say it's so hard because I do think Jane could be that guy, because he's 6'10 and he's got a great wingspan. But he moves so fluidly, but he's already a pretty solid defender as far as, like, you know, what he's shown as a rookie and his instincts and his, obviously, his physical ability. But he's one of those guys, his size, his length can help him defend like some of the bigger fours, but then he's so fluid, he can keep up with threes and twos even. He's got some freaky deaky skills for his size. So I do think that I believe in the shot, Usman Jang. I think that he is ultimately, if he turns out to be what the Thunder hope he can be, and what the Pelicans saw in him, and what the Cavs saw in him, all these teams viewed him as a top 10 guy. He could be a two way guy, but you know, Poku is very, very young still. and how he's played this season, you know, shooting, you know, like around 40% from three, all the block shots. He looks like a guy that can be that guy too. I just think that ultimately the Thunder have a lot of guys. Eventually they're either going to get, you know, a free agent or trade for a guy, or, you know, maybe they land like a Wembanyama or a Cam Whitmore. Maybe they're very fortunate in the draft. You know, or maybe they end up liking, you know, one of those other power forwards or forwards at the top of the draft. I would say that the probability would say that it would be somebody not on the roster. So I'm going to say no, just because okay. I'm going to play the odds and say when you're looking at either a free agent or a trade or somebody in an upcoming draft, I think there's more options there than just Poku or Jang. But if it ends up being Poku or Jang, that could be a really, really good thing, because it would, you know, be very telling as far as their development goes. That was long-winded. It's a hard question.
Do you see Cam Whitmore as a power forward or more of a wing guy? He's listed at 6'7", 225.
Yeah, I feel like he's a three, but here's the deal. The Thunder definitely like to play five out positionless ball. Like that's mm-hmm. where they want to go. And I think if Chet Holmgren is everything he's cracked up to be, him patrolling the paint, you know, kind of his rim protection could be pretty special potentially. So I think that could cover up some things if you want to play a 6'7" guy at the four. Look, the Thunder have been playing J-Dub 6'6" at the four of the season. They're playing JRE at center a lot. He's like 6'8". So can you get by with playing a 6'7" guy at power forward? Yeah, you can. I mean, look at the Warriors with Draymond Green playing him at center or power forward. So you can do it. And I think the Thunder are trending that way. I mean, like, they want size. Don't get me wrong. They want the length and the wingspans and all those things. But I think you could get by with him at the four. I really like Cam Whitmore, by the way. He's my number three guy, even over Amen Thompson and Nick Smith. Whitmore is my number three guy right now.
What do you think about, let's say it's Brandon Miller? What do you think about him compared to Jang or Poku at the four?
Yeah, I'd see Brandon Miller as a three also. Okay. Maybe even more so. I don't possibly.
That's what he's listed at. He's listed 6'9", 200, listed as a small forward, but he's a little bigger than Cam.
Yeah, I guess it's just, I don't know. There's something about like his play style or I don't know what it is, but he seems more like a three to me. But yeah, again, 6'9", he could do it. Just like Usman Jang may look skinny and Poku may look skinny. But as far as like weak side defense, I think that Poku and Chet, everybody joked about the thin towers, but that rim protection would be nice. I mean, Poku is a top 10 shot blocker this year, and imagine him with Chet patrolling the paint. That could be really nice. And if he's shooting 40% from three, I mean, you really can make a case for Poku, especially if he starts, you know, keeps improving in the other areas, the small areas. You know, the turnovers and the reads and things like that.
And that's kind of why I say that the team already has that player currently, at least for next season. Because like we just mentioned, those are the only, I'm looking at a mock draft, and those are the only two listed small forwards in the top 10. And I don't see the Thunder drafting for fit at all. You know what I mean? I don't think they will consider any position as far as what they're going to take. There's just a lot of guards in this draft. A lot of 6'2" to 6'7" type guys in this draft, aside from obviously Victor. So if Victor, let's go down that road.
I was just about to bring that up.
If that's who it is, it's just him and Chet?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Chet Holmgren can be a four. I mean, if Victor Wembanyama, and call him whatever you want, call Victor a four and Chet a five, or Chet a four. And I mean, it would probably be Chet four and Wembanyama 5. I mean, Wembanyama is crazy.
26.3 points a game, 10.5 rebounds a game, and 3.2 blocks.
I mean, just good luck scoring in the paint with, if you have Chet and Wembanyama down there. Like, if you want to play like the, you know, the ultimate scenario, yes, Chet would be the 4, Wembanyama the 5, Shea at 6'6" with a 7-foot wingspan is your 1, Josh Giddey 6'8",
and J-Dub.
And J-Dub with a 7'2" wingspan as your 1, 2, 3.
It's the 7-foot. It's the at least 7-foot wingspan club.
Yeah, or Zhang. I mean, Zhang. Yeah. You know, he's 6'10". Or yeah. Poku. Play those guys. Like, imagine Zhang or Poku at the small forward position with Chet and Wembanyama at the 4 and 5.
It's bananas. I want to clean up. Those were per 36 numbers, not per game numbers. But still, okay. Amazing yeah. Stuff from Victor.
Yeah. No. I'll put a bow on this segment, like this question with this. I really like the upside of Zhang, and I really like what Poku has shown this season. So there is absolutely some potential there that one of those guys could be the starting 4 moving forward for sure. Or maybe Josh Giddey, ultimately, that's where he settles in on defense and offense. You know, what is he, the 1 or the 4, or the 2 or 3, whatever. The Thunder have options. I just know that, you know, they want to add another blue chip guy, and that doesn't mean it's going to be a power forward. That could be, and they just seem so guard heavy already. Mm-hmm. With high potential guys. And then, you know, you got Chet at the 5. So it just feels like when they add another blue chip guy, whether that's draft, free agent, trade, it just feels like it would settle into that position, but that doesn't mean that's what's going to happen whatsoever.
If they pick in the 2 spot again, that's going to be very interesting.
You got to go Scoot. Like, without it, it's Scoot 100%.
I think so too. But even still, it's very interesting.
Would it, like, you know, at that point, and that's where, like, the size and versatility of Giddey and J-Dub and Zhang really, you know, helps out. Because sure. You can play, you know, SGA, Scoot, Giddey, J-Dub, as whatever you want to call the 1, 2, 3, 4, and then Chet. I mean, mm-hmm. You can do it. It's a little funky. But J-Dub having a 7'2 wingspan and Giddey being a 6'8 guard helps out with that. And it just feels like Wembanyama is a clear 1 and Scoot is a clear 2. And the Thunder, you just can't pass up that top-end talent like that.
No question. All right. Oklahoma City's back at it tomorrow. They host Miami. It feels like they've been on the road forever. They've played, let's see, 7 out of their last 8 have been on the road. So they're coming home for a long homestand, probably one of the longest of the season, if not the longest. They will play their next 6 games at home, 7. They won't go back on the road until December 29th against Charlotte. So they are home for a couple weeks, and they have Miami tomorrow and then Minnesota on Friday, which those Minnesota games are always fun. So we will be back next week. We'll probably do another 3-on-3 here with these questions. And
I won't talk so long next time, I promise.
No, it's great. We are assigned good questions. We are on the countdown to getting our guy Spencer Davis back on here, and then we're talking 2-hour podcast, because, you know, these questions, these answers, are, if they're going to be this long, we're gonna have to break out some time for for old Spencer Davis. We know he's got some takes. So Brandon, as always, thank you very much.
Absolutely, have a good night, Ryan.
All right, you as well. Thunder fans, thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon. This is the Daily Thunder Podcast. A great way to support Daily Thunder is by visiting one of our partners, ShopGood. ShopGood has you covered on all Thunder-related clothing items, including original and hand-printed shirts, hats, and stickers for both adults and kids.
be sure to check out our Thunder Shield tee, which pays homage to Oklahoma's Native American culture and state flag. To view Daily Thunder's entire catalog at ShopGood, visit shopgoodokc.com/daily-thunder. Thank you for listening to this podcast and for supporting Daily Thunder.